You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 86. Today is February 10th, and Steve, we're not too far off from Pitchers and Catchers, the World Baseball Classic, more drafts that actually matter, and opening day is, what, about 7 weeks away? We can handle that. It's going to be a great show. Thanks, you guys, for joining us. We're talking about a fun topic and kind of playing devil's advocate on it. We are buying or selling the ADP risers. The industry is slowly speaking out on which players need to be higher on the draft board. And while we all love these players, and that's why they're risers, we're going to take a closer look at how high can they rise before we've got to tap out and say, this is a little too rich for our blood. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. You guys can follow us on Twitter. The show is at Wins Above Pod. I am at @Van_verified, and Steve is at @Stav8818. Steve, I know we're both, you especially, a little under the weather here on this evening, cold winter evening. How's it going, man? Are you just trying to grind this one out and get through the off season, or how's life out there?
Yeah. Life with a kid. Your kid is basically always sick, and then you're always sick by like osmosis, sure. Especially in the winter. So learning that slowly, as I now have with everything that went on and staying inside for like the last 2.5 years, I felt like I hadn't been sick in 2 years, and now I'm more than making up for it this winter, seemingly getting sick every other week. But whatever, baseball is here, talking fantasy baseball to it's like, that's like my version of, the chicken noodle soup to make you feel better. Fantasy baseball, it's chicken noodle soup for the soul, for me at least.
Steve, I would normally never attempt this reference, but you being a baseball guy, did you ever play a little backyard baseball growing up, that little like cartoon computer game?
Did I play that game? It's like a cult legend between me and some of my friends, one of my good buddies.
I was going to name drop that you sound like Mikey Brett Thomas. I have a stubby nose, but I'll be okay.
That's good.
That's a deep cut there to start us out. But yeah, I'm with you, man. It's just feeling the grind. I've told you on several occasions that work for me has just been a hellstorm in the past like 7 weeks. The Mexico trip helped, but to say I am ready for warmer weather, calmer waters on the work front, and actual baseball that matters, we got brighter days ahead, Steve. That's what we do, is we got to get through the grind of the off season, and we got a great show. We'll try to keep it moving on the conveyor belt because you're a little under the weather, and we got a lot to talk about. So, before we jump into the names, we got a bunch, folks. Steve, I want your thoughts in general on this topic, because there's the school of thinking that is go out and get your guy. And so many names on this list are the sexy names, the names that if you want them on your roster, you're probably going to have to reach a round or two just to make sure, because at least 5 other people in the draft room are going to be thinking, oh, I want this guy too. So I love the topic that we're trying to find where we draw the line. I don't know how good we'll be at this, because you and I both have a hard time quitting some of these players. And I just want your thoughts on like approaching ADP risers when it comes to drafts. I mean, does it all come down to the player, or do you have a certain philosophy? Talk to me about the ADP risers.
It's really hard because it's the market dictating the cost on a player, and if that cost is rising, there's probably good reason for it, right? Like, the market's always correct. Like, the cost is what the cost is going to be, and it's more of the time what it should be, or more times than not, it's what it should be. Like, these guys are hyped up for a reason. Everyone starts to get in it, especially now as it's like draft prep season, right? Like, mm-hmm. We talk about that kind of all November through January, right? Like, oh, I can't wait to dig in and find my guys. Well, the guys are found and their cost is going up. I think we talked about it a little bit before too. It's kind of like the advantage of doing a draft in like a crazy time, like November, December, right? Like you could beat this sort of market correction. But now we're getting to the point where you kind of can't. And all these guys that you're finding good reasons that are undervalued, you know, the rest of your competition is also realizing that as well. But I also think that it's a good tool to say, hey, like, I didn't realize this guy is rising. Like, maybe I should pay more attention to him. And, you know, not every draft is the same. And if there is a guy that stays around the original value, right, like you could say, hey, this guy was a riser in a lot of drafts. He's still around at his, you know, January cost. Maybe it's something that I should pay attention to or scoop up. So, you know, it's a good tool to sort of identify kind of sleepers, I guess, because like this is the market telling you who are the sleepers, even though, you know, it's like the Paul Sporer quote, like the wide awake sleepers, right?
Yep.
Guys that are too obvious to be sleepers and just aren't anymore, just because the price isn't there, or the value at least isn't there.
Yeah, a lot of good nuggets in there. I think if any of these guys falls to you in a draft, and by fall we mean at you kind of at value or at the price of their ADP, I think it's almost worth tweaking your strategy. If you felt like you had a need there, you can shift and grab this guy because, you know, these are the ones that are kind of soaring up the board. And then we'll round out the show by talking about a few guys that we believe will rise from here on in. So it's kind of like if you have a draft now, maybe you can get out in front of the curve a little bit. But you brought up Spore, Steve, and I go back to our podcast with Paul Spore last winter, and it's the example I love coming back to because Justin Verlander at the time, his ADP was like 110, and I remember Spore just going all in and saying, you know, I feel like there's going to be this big middle step in the spring where everyone pushes Verlander up to like ADP 60 and people are kind of in or out. And he was laughing and saying, I'm just going to cut out the middleman and jump ahead of all that because I'm fine taking him in the 40s. And I think that's another part of this is like, you know, not only has it risen too much, but also on the flip side, like, you know, are we still buying them? Do we still think that there's room for profit, even with kind of the crazy surge on some of these names? So it's going to be a great show. Super excited. And I think with that said, we just jump in. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, let's do it. Well, I love it.
I think we got to start with the name that every time we've heard his ADP, we've said that's going to go up. And it now is happening. And it's Christian Javier. So Javier, we should preface that all of these came from a fantastic Bloom board. You guys got to follow Ryan at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield puts out these great kind of spreadsheet table boards. And these were the current risers. So Christian Javier on the list climbed up from ADP 71 to 61. And Javier, Steve, it's well documented that he is your guy. You got him in the mock draft with Nick Pollock. We've heard the chatter that this feels like Spencer Strider with a 30-pick discount. Now that discount is starting to fade a little bit, but for good reason. I mean, for anyone who missed it last year, 148 innings, the record 11-9 was actually a little unlucky because he had a 2.54 ERA, a 0.95 WHIP, and 194 strikeouts in those 148 innings. So there's so much to like about Javier. And Steve, I guess if you want to give the summary of where you're at with Javier, but then we're going to have to spend quite a minute talking about what you got to invest. We'll throw some names around him in the draft order. But what do you think about Javier and the helium here?
So you kind of,
said everything you were going to say.
Yeah. Well, no. No, you gave away why I'm still in sort of in your spiel there. You know, the narrative is it's Spencer Strider with a 30 pick discount. Okay, now it's just Spencer Strider with the 20 pick discount. You know,
right,
still pretty good. He went from pick 71 to pick 61 in Ryan's breakdown there in his Bloom board. So that's, you know, November, December ADP versus January ADP, like you said. So you know, if you still think that this is a discounted Spencer Strider, it's still a really good deal. And yeah, I'm still in it at Javier at pick 61.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at his, first of all, the Pitcherless 8.0, should have mentioned it in the upfront, but the site is outstanding. You guys got to get out there, check out the PL Pro stuff, which is going to be live in a few weeks. But it's got the percentiles now on, you know, which we didn't have before, which is great. I mean, that's one thing that Savant had. Now it's on Pitcherless. And like, you look at Javier's page, man, across all pitches, 91st percentile in swinging strike rate. His PLV, which is the new metric we'll be talking about upcoming in the shows, 86th percentile. Like, this guy's, even the whip, a 94th percentile. So you get the swing and miss stuff, but he's still just like, I mean, the control is not that bad. I think there's still room for growth there. That might be volume and control, the two things that you kind of squint and say, here's a little bit of risk. But overall, like, you know, the home run to fly ball rate is great for Javier. He's just, I mean, the guy is an SP1. The question becomes, when you look at names around him, who he is now kind of scooting up to, we got Julio Urias, a couple picks ahead of him, Shane Bieber, a pick ahead of that, and Kevin Gausman. So when you see those names, Steve, Urias, Bieber, Gausman, you still liking Javier above those guys, or do you think that's priced about right?
I think that it's priced about right, but I could argue Javier ahead of all of those guys, in my opinion. You know, Bieber doesn't have the strikeout numbers that he did from, you know, the shortened season when he was striking out the world and won the Cy Young. Same with Urias, and you know, the projections, I think they're wrong on Urias and sort of always have been, but you just don't get the strikeout upside that you do with Javier with Urias and Bieber. And if you're in a position where, like, you're, you know, you faded starters early and you want to get your first starter, I think the one with the highest upside out of those names is Javier. The one name, and this is kind of odd considering he's the closest in ADP to him and behind these guys, is Kevin Gausman. You know, he has shown the strikeout capability. Yeah. There's been, you know, a lot of indications that he was pretty unlucky last year, but, you know, the command, especially when you rely on a splitter like Nick Pollock always talks about, it's a really hard pitch to command. It could be wonky from year to year, from start to start, from month to month. So I could see an argument for Javier as well. Toronto's, I would think, a worse place to pitch than Houston. Houston's, I know it has the short porch there with the Crawford boxes, but I think overall it's more neutral than Toronto. And Toronto's also moving all of the walls in, which is kind of going under the radar, I think, in my opinion. The noise out of Toronto is that, you know, this is making it more neutral for pitchers and neutral for home runs. But when you look at what they actually did, they moved all there. There's one wall that's moved back. It's not like they moved this wall in, that wall back. Everything was moved in. So I don't see how that's not just sort of their spin on it. So it might become a worse environment to pitch there in Toronto for Gausman. So, yeah, I think that if you're in that situation, like, I could see the case for Javier if you need, like, a late, you know, a guy who's being drafted as an early SP2 as an SP1. Like, I think Javier mm-hmm. has the most upside. So I would take him. Definitely over Urias and Bieber just because of the strikeouts, but Gausman, maybe Castillo too, are a little bit tougher, but I like Javier better than Urias and Bieber for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that, with the strikeouts you're going to get from Javier. I still think there's kind of a health risk with Bieber. Maybe that's not fair, but Javier and Gausman is where it gets really tricky for me for the reasons you mentioned with the strikeout rate. But I think it's worth noting that the projected volume for Javier is probably a little bit higher than Strider. ATC's got him at 171 innings. That is like within 5 or 10 of Gausman. So actually Javier's strikeout totals are projected higher than Gausman. And, you know, the ratios look better as well. And then you mentioned the fences coming in. I'm looking at the ERA projections for Javier at like a 3.63, 3.74. I think that's extremely conservative for what he showed last year. Yeah,
just
I'm talking
myself volume
into
alone,
this, dude.
Javier pitched 148 innings last year. He had 194 strikeouts. Bieber pitched what? Like, he pitched over 200 innings, one of the few guys to get that. I don't think he had 194 strikeouts, right? Maybe he was close, but...
Right.
So around the same Javier amount of strikeouts and 50 less innings. Like,
yeah, and then they're on the projections, they're giving Javier 20 more innings and only 10 more strikeouts. Like,
yeah,
that
he's going to approach like 250 if that's the case, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're kind of talking ourselves into this, that despite the helium, we still might be backing Christian Javier. Is that fair?
I am, yes. Despite the helium, I am still backing Christian Javier. I am in.
Love it. Okay. Well, let's move down the board a little bit. And we're talking about another Astro, new Astro, and Jose Abreu. And Abreu kind of started out this offseason with, you know, some vanilla overtones. But really, with the move to the Astros, it started slow. And now his ADP is surging, where he's gone from 107 down to 92. So he leapfrogged Vinny Pascantino in that time at first base. And it's a little bit harder with Abreu positionally because the first baseman in front of him, you have to go all the way up to Matt Olson in like the 50s. But to talk about Abreu recently, I mean, just this past season, the name of the game was the power outage. So, you know, he still put up a durable season, 157 games. He's usually good to stay on the field. But just 15 homers last year. The 304 average was terrific. Now everyone's talking about the Crawford boxes. I think you're going to get your runs, RBIs, your average out of Abreu. The question comes down to the pop. And it really, the market's kind of buying in that this is kind of a rare set of skills to get at a scarce position deep in the top 100. So, Steve, your thoughts on Jose Abreu, and then we'll play a little chicken with some util guys around him, since it's going to be weird to do it for first base.
I haven't been that in on it, but I think I should be. All of the metrics other than the barrel rate, which kind of just regressed to what it was pre-2019 for him, looked really good. The hard hit, the average exit velocity, all of that is still really elite. It was just, you know, a not as elite 9.5% barrel rate. But in 2015, 16, 17, 18, he had, you know, decent homer totals. He hit between 22 and 33 homers all of those years and didn't have a barrel rate higher than 8.9. That was in 2015. So, you know, he's kind of one of those guys that probably gets the most out of those pull fly balls. He was obviously younger then, so maybe he got a little bit more out of it than he would have in his age 35 season in 2022. But that's going to be remedied by those Crawford boxes. You know, as a righty, like, you see what Alex Bregman does with sort of a pedestrian barrel rate. You know, he had, I know it was the year of the rat ball, but he hit 40 homers. I'm not saying that Abreu is going to get 40, but, you know, he's going to be back up over 20. It's not going to be the 15 that he had last year. I would think it's between, you know, 22 to 30 with all those good counting stats, the great plate discipline that he has. He only struck out 16.2% of the time. So, you know, that could have been a conscious decision, right? Like, hey, I'm going to cut down on my strikeout rates. I don't have as much raw power as I did even as far as last year in 2021, and you know, the ball is deadened. I'm not going to get the most out of my opposite field fly balls. And that could have been a conscious approach. He went from 261 batting average to 304. That worked. Now that he has those Crawford boxes, Abreu is this, you know, this is more soft analysis, but he's the cerebral hitter that I think is going to know exactly how to take advantage of that situation. I'm really excited for Abreu, in Houston, and I think it's a great option if you don't get one of those early first basemen. I think I'm going to be targeting it more because I just know how horrible third base is and even outfield in the beginning. So maybe I'll feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that I could snag Jose Abreu a little bit later and shore up on some other positions that I don't think are as deep or have as good of an option as Abreu at pick 92.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because we've been talking about so many positions that are scarce, and it's like second base and third base and even outfield. You know, you got to get in on pitching. So it's one of those things where it's like, there's only so many rounds in the first eight rounds, you know, so you got to sacrifice a little bit. And if you feel like Abreu and Vinny P is enough of kind of a two-pronged parachute that you can skip first base at the top, that these are some good options. You mentioned, you know, the fact that he's a cerebral hitter. He is a veteran. He's a savvy hitter, but it's, you know, kind of gets forgotten that he's in his age 36 season. So maybe that's an argument for the power drop off, but the numbers really don't add up. Like when you look at the barrel rate, it's just a tick down from where it's typically been, at least from 2021. And then you look at the home run to fly ball drop, and holy smokes, 2020, his home run to fly ball was 33%. That was inflated. We knew it was going to come down. 2021, his home run to fly ball was 20%, but last year, just 10% on home run to fly ball. He's a career 19% on home run to fly ball. So I think you're absolutely right. Probably 20, 25 homers. Anything else is gravy, but then you're getting the average there. So I like Abreu. I've been a fan since he came into the league. I'm with you. I think I will be interested here. Now, throw positions out of the equation, Steve. I mean, it's kind of a strange exercise, but imagine you've already got first base covered and some of these other positions. Just in terms of the player, the guys going right next to him, Xander Bogaerts, Wander Franco, George Springer a little bit ahead, Eloy Jimenez just 10 picks ahead. When you hear those names, Bogaerts, Wander, Springer, Eloy, where do you think Abreu falls on kind of your target threshold there?
I think I'd take him above most, if not all, of those guys. Eloy would probably be the most tempting, but he's just been such a health risk that there's a good argument for Abreu there too. Bogaerts, I know there's some uninspiring Statcast metrics and batted ball metrics with him, and then also something that we talked about, it's the first year of a really big and daunting contract, right? Like we've talked about the pressure there. I know with PLV, Scott Chu was putting out the rolling charts of Marcus Semien, you know, the aggressiveness and sort of the reach rate, how it was at an all-time high the first few months that he was in Texas, and then sort of figured it out as his season got on, when, you know, he became the player that we expected him to. But, you know, remember April and May, Marcus Semien from last year, there was people probably dropping him or wanting to cut him with how bad that was. So the new contract pressure is a real thing for Bogaerts, despite the amazing new situation that he's in. So I think I like Abreu more than most of those guys. You know, team context, just being in a much more friendly hitter environment for righties with the Crawford boxes there. I like Abreu more than I think all of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I was ready to fight you on Eloy, because, you know, that's kind of been a target of mine, both of ours really, in the offseason. But I think, yeah, the durability for Abreu can't be overlooked. And you got to give him the nod on lineup context as well. So I think that's a fair assessment. So maybe Abreu, you're still okay to reach a little bit. I guess we got to ask the question, Vinny Pasquantino or Abreu? They're going right next to each other. This is well stated that this is a Vinny P podcast. This one's going to be tougher for me, Steve. I think the potential of Vinny P being Abreu with more pop that you can bank on, although the counting stats might be a little bit lower with the Royals, but where do you fall on that one?
His profile looks eerily similar to Jose Abreu. Like, and maybe, you know, it's smarter to go with Pasquantino because he's age 25 and, you know, coming into his power prime, but like,
yeah,
an 8.8% barrel rate, 92 average exit velocity, 113 max EV, all really good. You know, amazing plate discipline, just 11% strikeout rate last year, walked more than he struck out. You know, we've gone ad nauseum as to why we love Vinny Pasquantino, but I think that might be a good comp. Maybe peak Jose Abreu, you know, with possibly a little bit more pop, but, you know, it is a worse ballpark situation that Abreu has been in basically for his whole career. But I'm going to take the cop out. I want one of those two guys as my first baseman if I don't have a first baseman in the first three, four rounds.
That's fair. Vinny P slated to bat cleanup in that lineup, and Abreu is slated to bat fifth. So kind of a wash there when you think about kind of the lineup turnover with the Astros being a better offense too. So, okay, well, let's move along. And this name, Steve, was one that I drafted in our PL mock draft at a much better pick than where he's going at the moment.
Yeah, you wish you could get him at that price, right?
Oh, boy. Yeah. So Taylor Ward has climbed from ADP 135 to 124. And when I ran the numbers recently, he is surging. So in the past 4 weeks, it's all the way up to 118. So Ward is kind of the tale of three seasons where, you know, he set the MLB on fire in the first third. Then he had the injury, and that kind of threw him into a funk, is kind of how you would assess. Maybe that's looking at it and kind of painting the narrative, but it really looked like in the splits of the middle months, it might have been bugging him, the injury he had. So to run those numbers, OPS in April, 1284, OPS in May, a 1043, June and July, 626 and 577. August also bad at 662, and then set the world on fire again in September with a 1059 OPS. Finished the season with a really good balanced line, 23 homers, 5 steals, 281 average, and some good counting stats there considering that he only played 135 games. That's an offense that's improving. We know it's kind of top heavy with obviously Trout, Otani, but now they got Hunter Renfroe in the mix.
Drury,
that's right. And Taylor Ward is set to bat, let's see, leadoff for the Angels. So this, I mean, there's good reason why there's the helium here. But talk about Taylor Ward, Steve, and let's look at some names around him.
Yeah, it's an easy narrative to buy into and essentially tell yourself, okay, this is what happened. The neck was still bothering him. You know, even though he missed only a small amount of time on the actual IL and number of games relative to how long it actually bothered him. And then it got better, right? And then you look at the Savant page, the Pitcherless page, and it's all bright red and the top percentiles that you like to see. So I like it. I understand it. And I still think that this is kind of a discount considering how strong of a line that he put up and the actual metrics to back it up, right? Like, there's nothing that this guy really does bad on the baseball field. Like, even the sprint speed is, you know, 79th percentile. So it's kind of like a five-tool player that I think, you know, because he got hurt and because, you know, his breakout was in his age 28 season, that, you know, the market hasn't fully adjusted. And, you know, had he not ran into that wall, we might be talking about Taylor Ward as like a top 4 or 5 pick. It was trending that way the first 2 months of the season, right?
Oh, gosh, like, yeah. You know? League winner for sure
So it's quick to forget that. It's another one that it's not too steep of a riser there. And I kind of like Taylor Ward, and I wouldn't be surprised if I take him over some of the names that we're going to go over here shortly.
Yeah, and that's, you know, outfield, it's been a theme that especially at this part of the draft, it gets really thin. So a lot of these names you kind of double take at, and you're like, he's going there? But I think a big part of that is the position scarcity where everybody's getting pushed up. And on top of that, there's reasons to like some of these guys for different reasons, but the ones around him. So if Taylor Ward's at, you know, 118, which is the past month, 7 picks in front of him is Jake McCarthy, who, you know, we saw a limited sample size last year in 100 games. We did see the 23 steals. So McCarthy's obviously a specialist there who's going to help with average as well. He hit 283 last year. You know, some of that might have been inflated a little bit. But McCarthy, yeah, there's some pop. I mean, he might be like a, you know, on a good season, 15 homer guy, but certainly could go off for 30 steals for the D-backs. Let's start with that one, Steve. McCarthy or Ward? You kind of got the balanced production with Ward, and then you got kind of a wild card with McCarthy.
On the PitchCon panel this year, I think I called Jake McCarthy 2023 version of Miles Straw, which is probably a bit harsh. McCarthy's definitely a much better hitter than Miles Straw. And Straw was one of my better fades last year.
Just same area of the draft, too.
Yeah, same area of the draft.
Right here.
And I think it's tougher to fade McCarthy because he definitely is a better hitter, but I don't know if he's as good as the run that he went on last year. So I'm essentially out of McCarthy, so that's an easy one for me. I take Taylor Ward there. Obviously, team context, though, like if you need speed, you're right. Going to lean McCarthy, but like there's a scenario where McCarthy isn't an everyday player with just how much talent, young talent, Arizona has in the outfield. So they don't need someone to struggle for too long before they're replaced by, you know, another young player there, even with the move of Varsho to Toronto. So I'm very, very cautious with McCarthy, so that's an easy Taylor Ward win for me there.
Okay. McCarthy set to hit third, at least according to Roster Resource. A couple picks in front of McCarthy is Saya Suzuki, and then in front of them you got some wish-casting bounce backs with Byron Buxton, your kryptonite there, Steve, and then yeah. Tyler O'Neill, who's not your kryptonite. I can't think of a word that just stands for like disaster and doom and gloom, but that's what O'Neill has been for you.
Yeah, the stake in my back, I don't know.
So 20 picks there about for Buxton and O'Neill. But man, O'Neill's are in this from a Cardinals fan. O'Neill's kind of a risky play. And then Buxton, obviously, with the health concerns, could you see Ward kind of inching up toward these guys?
I don't know. I think it's much more name brand with Buxton and even O'Neill, too. And I genuinely like O'Neill as a bounce back. Buxton is just, you know, the injury risk. I've learned the hard way that it's just really, really hard to trust in there. I don't think that Ward will come up to those guys, but I still think I'd rather have Ward at his cost than O'Neill at pick 100, right? I'd rather take someone else.
Afford to wait around.
Exactly. Yeah. And then wait around for O'Neill.
Okay.
Yeah. Or wait around for Ward. Excuse me.
Yep. I agree with that for sure. But I think, you know, put force to a decision, I think I would bet on Ward having, in the range of outcomes, I think Ward is a safer bet for a productive season at that kind of like pick 110 range. So I think we're a thumbs up on all these so far, surprisingly, with Javier, Abreu, and Ward. The next one we got is Charlie Morton, who is one that, Steve, you've been kind of preaching this as well. I've seen you out on the Twitter sphere talking about Morton, so why don't you lead off, because he's obviously, you know, when he's on the mound, when he's dialed in, you know, he looks great when he's going. And last year we kind of saw, you know, him start really slow and then it got better. But you're getting strikeouts with Morton. He's also 39 years old. His ADP has climbed from 171 to 159. So your thoughts on Charlie Morton, and are you still riding the wave as his ADP kind of moves up here?
Yeah, I think you saw my tweet to another former guest of the pod, Frank Stanfel, who did a similar exercise to Ryan Bloomfield, went over some risers over a time period, and Morton was one of them. And I was arguing that he was still going too low. Like, there was a reason why he had that performance drop off in the beginning of 2022. You know, it's one of my early, you know, preaches to myself or something that I like to do. It's like, look for a cause as to why a change is happening, why results are happening. And Morton was pitching and coming back from a broken leg that happened in the World Series. And then there was an article that he worked with, I believe it was Max Fried or Kyle Wright actually saw that he wasn't pushing fully off of his back leg, the leg that was broken. So obviously Morton's mechanics were compensated for that injury, and Wright's breakout, you know, developed from using more of his lower half and pushing off from that back leg off the rubber to generate more velocity and have more effective pitches. And they sort of worked on that. And then once that Morton figured that out, he's like, yeah, I wasn't using my back leg as much as I should have. And the results took off from there. So, you know, coming back from that injury after that, you know, he was the Charlie Morton of old. And I think that, you know, due to the fact that he's an old guy, I think it's an ageism thing that, you know, he's 39. Like, even if he didn't have that much of a down year, there probably would be some sort of discount that shouldn't necessarily have been there with Morton. So, you know, he made the line look respectable. I know the ERA wasn't as good as you would have hoped for where you draft Morton last year at 4.34, but, you know, looking at the splits by month, like, you can clearly tell that he figured something out and became the pitcher that you expected. In the second half, that's actually surprising. He had a 4.45 ERA in this first half, 4.19 mm-hmm. in the second half. So not as amazing as I would have thought, but I mean, he still held batters to just a 230 average in the second half. So
yeah, I think this is one of those, Steve, where, like, if you know, September, we kind of take our eye off of some of the fantasy happenings, and Morton kind of regressed in September. Now the good news is his fastball velocity, you know, he was still striking out over a batter per inning, but yeah, that month of September, over five starts, he had a 5.27 ERA, which is what pulls it up. But you're right, in the months before that, June, July, August, all sub 3.6 ERA and a whip right around one. So it was just, he wobbled a little bit at the very end. But yeah, so
his xFIP in September was much better. It was 3.93, so not as bad as,
gotcha,
as what.
So maybe a little bad luck. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, bad luck, yeah. When you look at it, 172 innings with 205 strikeouts, if you're counting on the 4.34 ERA coming down to, I don't know, 3.9, even 4, you'd take it with the strikeout stuff. So volume seems to still be kind of bankable. You know, the year before, 185 innings. Last year, 172. So I like it at that part of the draft. I mean, he's no spring hen, as they say, and going around 159, that's probably your SP5. But I think it's a good bet. So some names around him are Pablo Lopez, a few picks behind him, Chris Sale, exact same ADP. Then you got like Jordan Montgomery, Dustin May, Chris Bassett. So those are still some good pitchers, but Morton's an interesting name. Where would you kind of drop him in that group?
I think there's a lot more risk associated with all of those other players, right? Like, there's, you know, Morton's coming off a 172 inning season. I mean, other than Pablo Lopez, was there anyone in that range that had that close to that many innings with the strikeout numbers that Morton's capable of? You kind of have to wish cast.
Montgomery doesn't have the K's.
Yeah, Montgomery doesn't have the K's. Sale, you have to hope, is healthy. Bassett probably doesn't have the K's, I don't think. Definitely not.
You have to
hope that he's able to keep it together for a full season coming off of the injuries that he had. So Morton, I think, has the least path of resistance to having a, you know, an upside SP2-3 season like he's been basically locked to do the last few years.
Yeah, it's fair. I think May is going to be the sexy pick from that bunch, but I don't know that I'm in, just because I think the volume's going to be much lower. Monty can't turn the corner on the strikeouts consistently. Bassett, same story. Sale is an interesting one. I think as we get into spring, if Sale looks good, that's going to be the one that I might tick over Morton. But I think you're kind of selling me this offseason, because I was not looking at Charlie Morton as a great value, and I think that he is. So I like it. So we will talk more. We got some batters on the way, but we are going to take our first ad break, and we'll be right back. All right, so Steve, shifting on over to a guy whose name we've talked about on a couple episodes, but it's a guy I'm a fan of, and it's Vaughn Grissom. So when I was a fan, I was talking about him as ADP 189. He's now up to 175. And Grissom, you know, obviously with them moving on from Dansby Swanson, they're giving him a vote of confidence here. He, like Michael Harris II, completely skipped AAA, and as just 22 years old, came up last year in 96 games at the high minors. He was insane, 14 homers, 27 steals, batted 330. Then the 40 games in the majors, you know, it started really good, hit 291, five homers, five steals, but it definitely dropped off where, you know, by the time playoffs came around, they were giving at-bats to Orlando Arcia. He's a tough one to nail down because we've seen so little of him. I've noted that I kind of like the plate discipline. You and Shelley weren't as keen last episode, but Grissom, are you in a void, or are you just not really going out of your way to grab him?
I think I'm not really going out of my way to grab him. I think that this rise is just more due to the news that Swanson is no longer there. They're handing him the starting role, and it's, you know, essentially a way to get good exposure to the Atlanta lineup. But I don't know if that there's enough skills there for me, at least yet, for me to be fully bought in, especially as the price continues to rise. You know, I might need a little bit more of a reason other than like, hey, this guy's going to be playing every day for the Atlanta Braves. I think that there needs to be a little bit more skills growth, especially in this sort of second half of that 40-game stint where the league caught up to him a bit. I know that line still looks good, but that's buoyed from a really, really hot start. And I don't know if he's made that adjustment back like we saw Michael Harris do after he had a little bit of a cold spell in his second month and then readjusted and tore the cover off the ball again. I still want to see that with Grisham, and I don't want to pay much more than where he's going currently to find out if he's made that adjustment.
If you see him going off in spring training, well, is this the type of name that you would pay close attention to?
Maybe. I think this one might be like a classic, like don't pay attention to the spring numbers because like, you know, he had that exposure, like, you know, he can clearly hit big league pitching when he's on. If he's facing, you know, some quad A arms or things like that. You know, I've been fooled by Keston Hiura's spring training home runs, you know.
So. Yeah, Michael Franco. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we are due for a little bit of disagreement because I'm more in with Grissom. I like that the projections are as well. They got him at a 277 average, 14 homers, 16 steals in 124 games. That's what ATC has him at. And, yeah, even though he's batting ninth or set to bat ninth, I think the Braves lineup is good enough that I don't think that's going to map out to what ninth typically looks like in terms of at-bats and plate appearances. So, plus, you know, it should help with runs, and maybe they give him the green light on, you know, running on the base path. So I do like Grissom. Now, when I look at names around him, we got Jonathan India is actually going behind him. Brandon Lau is a few picks ahead of him. And then Tyro Estrada is about six picks ahead of him. And I'm actually going to come out with a statement here, say it with the chest, that I like Grissom more than India, Lau, and Estrada this year. It might be a hot take for you, Steve, but I'm planting the flag that I think the plate discipline from the minors, the power speed, combo, and at the position eligibility with him, I think that it's worth it there. So what are your thoughts on those guys? Are you in on all of them ahead of Grissom, India, Lau, and Estrada?
There's no one that I really want to plant my flag in out of those names. It's a tough spot. Like, that tells me that I don't want to draft the second baseman from this right. from that group. Like, I don't know. I guess there's so many positions that you're going to have to be drafting from this range of position of players that you don't like for one of these spots. Like, you can't be strong everywhere. So I could see. I think I will talk about it in a little bit. I like Jonathan Diaz's bounce back. Tyler Estrada, we've talked offline as we took him in our dynasty draft, that he's kind of a stuff and things guy. Shout out to Eric Berry, who sent me a DM to explain what a stuff and things guy is. So we'll have to be a little bit better about that. Just a guy that, you know, a guy that contributes a little bit here and there everywhere. Sort of like a later round five tool player. Not necessarily like the star five tool player that you think of, but someone that could help you here and there in all these different categories. So
that is the correct definition. I've always associated stuff and things guy with like the Ben Zobrist, where like any one thing doesn't look good.
That was exactly my description to Lucas there.
Okay.
Good. Zobrist was my prime example. So exactly.
Okay, so I think we're a little bit split on Grissom, but we're in agreement that that is kind of a rough, you know, definition of parachute players, where you're in trouble if you don't have a second baseman. But maybe that's hopefully a middle infield spot. And you mentioned Jonathan India, Steve. Let's just segue right to him, because he's another one who's on the rise for ADP from 189 to 178. And India, you liked going into last year. And, you know, I guess just what's the outlook for India? Do we think even with this Reds offense, he's going to turn it around? Because last year when we did see him for the 103 games, it just wasn't quite the same. The average came down 20 points, down to a 249 average, and then just 10 home runs, three steals. It was kind of meh. The OPS dropped from 835 in 2021 down to 705 last year, but... Do you think there's a nice bounce back opportunity here for India?
Maybe I should have planted my flag here in India a little bit more in that last one as a head to head. Eno Saris did a piece for The Athletic about bounce back players. A few of them were more on the higher end that I think I agree with well, too. You know, like Juan Soto. And India was. I think the third name there listed, Acuna, was another one that's, I think, a pretty easy one to make a case for as well, just coming off the injury. But I think India is also coming off an injury that I don't think is as, like, obvious, or people are talking about it as much. You know, he had that groin injury that I think he was on the IL twice for. Like, he hurt it, came back, hurt it again. And
yeah, there was a hamstring.
And, yeah, it was a hamstring. Yeah. So... I think that was bothering him all year. I mean, it's evidence, and what Eno talked about in his article was the sprint speed. He was 86th percentile sprint speed in 2021, down to 59th percentile sprint speed in 2022. Like, he's only age 26. I don't think he got that slow one year because, you know, it was because of the hamstring injury. And who knows, like, how, what else that was impacting. You know, we talked about with Charlie Morton how your lower half it can really affect things, and for a hitter too, that if you don't have a leg to drive off of to hit, like, that's going to affect you. So I think that really impacted a lot of his game. You know, there was still some concerning things, like, you know, the whiff percentage was worse. The walk rate was worse. The K rate was worse in 2022, or around the K rate was around the same, but still the point stands, everything across the board essentially was worse metrically. So I just think that a good portion of that can be explained away by that recurring and nagging hamstring injury. And with a full offseason to recover, I like India as a bounce back candidate.
Okay. Yeah, I think as long as expectations are tempered a little bit, because even going back to his minor numbers, you know, we never saw him fully in AAA, but in 2019 across, high A and double A, basically 112 games, 11 homers, 11 steals. He batted like 265. So that's, I mean, I guess I'm just wondering like what type of a player he is, because that first year did look great. But when you look at 326 BABIP, even last year he had a 305 BABIP and he hit 249. So I'm just trying to grasp, like, I think he will help across the board, but I just worry that it might be like a 15 homer, 8 steals, and a 265 batting average. And it's like, how much is that helping with the Reds' offense around him? That's why I just think Grissom, there's a little bit more of the unknown that plays into his ceiling. But I do think India is a solid player. Like, eye test as well. I've seen him play a handful of times against the Cardinals, and like he's easy to root for, and the Reds back him. You know, he's supposed to hit second in that lineup, so he's definitely got a leg up on batting order. But yeah, I'm kind of medium on India, probably where you're at with Grissom. Like, if he falls and I need him, I think yep. I would take him for a MI spot, but that's probably the extent of it.
Yeah, I think that's fair as well. Like, you have to talk yourself into India's power just because the barrel rate, the hard hit percentage isn't there. Even though, you know, it looked like he vastly outperformed those in 2021. So you could have expected some things to regress without the injury. But I think that he might be the player that isn't necessarily defined by those specific metrics. And, you know, he plays in the ballpark that could cover it up too if he's going well. So I like India in that range. I think I would take him out of all those names listed. But understand the hesitancy as well.
Yep. Well, let's move to a fan favorite and a personal favorite as well in Lars Nootbaar. Steve, we about broke the draft room on our Dynasty League when we grabbed Nootbaar way early, but it was evident that a lot of people were not happy about that, which is a great sign. Last year, we saw a completely different Lars Nootbaar. He has been just kind of the poster boy of the bat speed and, like, is it Driveline?
I believe he's at Driveline, yeah. Arenado's been there too, so it makes sense, the Cardinal connection, yeah.
It does, yeah, and added 8 miles per hour on his swing speed. His barrel rate climbed from 2021 at 5% all the way up to 12% last year, which was 88th percentile. There are people, there's a lot of chatter of Nootbaar kind of getting moved up to either hit leadoff or bat second because of his plate skills as well, where he's got a nearly 15% walk rate. And Tommy Edman does not. So I think there's a lot of upside for Nootbaar. And yeah, the ADP is reflecting it. He's gone from an ADP of 199 all the way up to 184. Again, there's a little bit of that outfield tax that you got to pay. So Nootbaar, the one thing that I want to look at, because he's a lefty hitter and the Cardinals do have a crowded outfield, against lefties, he still hit well. I batted 273 against them, actually higher average, just less power. So yeah, I think I'm all systems go on Nootbaar, Steve, but anything you'd like to add, we can look at some names around him as well.
I love Lars Nootbaar. I am going to need you to get me a Lars Nootbaar jersey when you go to a Cardinals game this summer. You know, do a jersey exchange or something. You know, I'll get you a Met or Yankee, whichever one you want, and I'll have you send me a Nootbaar one. I'm going to try and get him absolutely everywhere. I still love that, you know, the price is relatively cheap. Pick 184 is, you know, I think it's still a great value for just all this, the things the guy does under the hood, his StatCast page, his pitcherlist page. Dave Swan had an article come out, second half hitters that you need to pay attention to, and Nootbaar was the first one. And one of the PLV, or one of the new pitcherlist tools, the rolling charts with PLV, his contact ability just throughout the year, just is a straight skyrocket up. He finished basically expected, his contact above expected is in like close to the 90th percentile is where he finished this season. And he just seems like a hitter that's finally putting it all together, all these tools, you know, working at Driveline, adding that bat speed, improving the barrel rate. I am basically all in on Nubar. I want to grab him everywhere. You know, he's a guy that I'll probably have to in my home league, like, bump up a round or two to make sure I get him. But hey, it's better to do that in, you know, what round is Nubar going in?
Yeah, that's probably like the 15th.
The 15th, yeah, like 15th, 16th, like, sure, whatever. Bump, you know, if that's better to, if you spend a 14th round pick than someone if you have to do it like I did last year with like O'Neal or Wander Franco in the second or third, right? We talked about that as sort of like a lesson learned. Like, take those bumps and do those risks later. And Nubar is going late enough that I still think it's okay to bump them there. So, yeah. Nubar's jersey, we'll have to arrange for that to be sent to me, please.
Yeah, I hope they got a buy one, get one, Steve. I'm in with you. Very excited. And keep your eye out for Nubar on Team Japan in the World Baseball
Interesting.
Classic.
Cool. I love that.
Extremely cool to see. It was a surprise that they had him there.
Off topic, but do you think – I just feel like with Walker sort of waiting in the wings and essentially that he's being an outfielder now, Jordan Walker, that is, like, are the Cardinals going to make a trade? Could they, you know, I know they like Carlson in center.
Like Carlson.
And his defense is great, but I know O'Neill's defense is great too. Like, is there a reason why they don't put him in center? Is he not as good in center? I guess maybe he has more trade value currently than Carlson, just with how bad Carlson was with the bat last year. And that's saying something, because O'Neill did have a bad year as well with injuries and overall with the bat. But I'm curious as to what you're putting your Cardinal fan hat on, what you think you're going to do there.
Yeah, I think moving Bader was a big vote of confidence for Carlson. And it just seems like Tyler O'Neill is the one, to me, where I see that as a trade chip. I mean, it's the writing is on the wall that we clearly need pitching, and there's no one left. O'Neill was signed to a 1 year recently, but you know, it's a 1 year contract. It's not a big vote of faith. So yeah, I mean, Burleson is on the bench and he's exciting too. So like, there's, you know, maybe Burleson could be put in a package cause he's a lefty, and you know, Nubar is also a lefty. I think they're, you know, Nubar is really the piece here that I think we're most excited about. And then when Walker comes up, yeah, absolutely. He's got to land in the outfield or DH. But when you look at our staff of Wainwright, Michaelis, I mean, Montgomery's fine, but Flaherty's on the way out. Matz isn't like a playoff contender. And then you look at the window of like Wilson Contreras, Goldie, Arenado, like this has to be a window and you need better pitching. So we have a surplus in outfield. Somebody's got to go. I don't think it's going to be Carlson or Nubar. I think it might be either O'Neill and or Burleson, and maybe some other pieces to bring in an arm. But yeah, I think Nubar is safe is my prediction. Just especially, I wanted to look at the lefty splits and they look good. So that's kind of my two cents on it.
I like it. I'm team Nubar as well, obviously. So go Newt. Newt, Newt.
Okay, well, let's keep rolling, Steve. We just got one more name, and then we'll bunch some potential future risers together as well. But very curious, a guy that we have not really talked about is Estery Ruiz for the Oakland A's. And Ruiz is a speed demon. I mean, you mentioned the Miles Straw thing. Like, this is hopefully not a single category guy, but I believe he is projected to steal, is it 27 or 30?
I see anywhere between 20 and 36 bases.
Wow. So, yeah, ATC falling in the middle at 25. But, yeah, he's projected to be like a top five steal source. And you'd imagine the Oakland offense will be so dormant that they'll let him run. The question is kind of like the Mondesi narrative back in the day is, can he get on base enough to actually make an impact? He's set to bat ninth in that lineup. And, you know, the plate skills are not good. I mean, last year, extremely short sample size, but a 2.8% walk rate. It was higher in the minors, more like, you know, 8, 9%. So Ruiz is, he's a boom bust pick, just 23 years old. 70 grade speed, but his ADP has surged from 291 up to 238. And we haven't talked about him, Steve. Are you going to have any shares of Esteri Ruiz?
Maybe if I'm absolutely desperate for steals in the late rounds. But, you know, looking at the projections, like, if he was on any other team, he probably wouldn't hit enough to hold an everyday job. But because it's Oakland, they just might play him and let him accumulate steals. But I would find it hard to believe that he'll be a contributor in any other category other than steals. And that's a tough thing to roster. Like, you know, look at Jorge Mateo last year. Like, yes, he had stretches and he hit, you know, what, like 12 homers. But there were some, you know, when he was ice cold, like, you know, when he's not getting a base, he's not able to run, and it's just a hole in your lineup. And despite the overall really good fantasy line Jorge Mateo put together last year, there was points where, you know, he was dropped in a lot of leagues. Yeah. So a guy with less power than that, clearly, I think, it might be tough to hold on to all year. And, you know, when injuries pile up and tough decisions need to be made with your roster, like, it's easy to move on from a guy like this if they're in the middle of a cold stretch, despite that upside for stolen bases. So, you know, even if he does get that 25, 30 steals, like, are you going to be able to time that right? And does it fit with your roster with, you know, when those 10 steals come in 2 weeks when that he's hot? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a harder thing to nail down in season when you have to actually manage the roster, which I think makes these speed only guys even tougher to roster. So I'm kind of out on Ruiz unless it's like, you know, a draft and hold, and hey, we're light on steals, let's try and bank another 15 to 20 here.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I would pay attention to in like spring training is if the contact skills, like if the average looks a little better than his projection of like a 225, because
yes,
to be fair, in the minors, you know, he's with the Padres in 2022 across, like, it looks like 80 games. He hit .344 at AA and .315 at AAA. And then he hit .329 in 37 games with the Brewers in AAA in 2022. So, you know, he's shown the ability to hit for average in the minors, but it's the, you know, the just his actual scout grades and his projections look really brutal. You know, and he doesn't strike out all that often. So it'll be one to just keep an eye on. I do think he is like a best ball specialist because of the points you're making, that if, you know, you don't have to deal with the headache of when to plug him in your lineup, and you let the systems just kind of put him in there, it can help. But the exercise of names going around him, you have Yoshida a few picks before, Ramon Laureano, Andrew Benintendi's going 20 picks before. All these guys are, you know, especially like Benintendi, Seth Brown, Verdugo, I think they're a lot more bankable as, again, like stuff and things guys, but they're nowhere near the help in speed. So I think it's very much just dependent on roster construction as kind of a cop out there. Anything to add on Ruiz there, Steve? I mean, as it relates to like a Benintendi or maybe Ramon Laureano is the better one. Like,
I think those guys could help you for sure in other places. Like, right? Like, Benintendi gives you a good average. You know, he talked about how he's hoping to tap into more power in Chicago now. So I just think that those guys are like, and they're just better locks to, like, have a job, right? Like, you know, I know Oakland's bad, but they're not going to run out, like, a 500 OPS if that's what it comes down to. Like, you know, but that's what he had in 17 games last year. So I need to see more from Ruiz, honestly.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, we'll talk about some potential future risers, but we are going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back. All right, Steve, I know we're kind of in the home stretch here, but an interesting way to look at this is, you know, getting out ahead of the next risers. And there was a great tweet from Matthew Davis with some good engagement there on Twitter at Maddie Wood. And he basically asked, who are some people you could see rising up the draft boards for ADP in the remaining time until opening day? And, you know, let's pair these first two pitchers, Lance Lynn and Tyler Glasnow. So right now, Lynn is going at pick 139, which is middle of the 12th round. And then Glasnow is a little bit pricier, going in the 8th round at pick 90. Between Glasnow and Lynn, who could you see kind of moving up more, relatively speaking? And what are your thoughts on these guys?
I think it's Glasnow. Like, if he comes out in spring training and looks like he did at the end of last year, I think he could shoot up just because the stuff is so tantalizing. And, you know, he was essentially, you know, on his way to becoming like this next fantasy ace that was going to be drafted in the next, you know, in the top two rounds for the next 5 years until Tommy John happened.
Right.
And like so famously at that press conference where he was just mad about like all the different grips of balls and everything like that, which is not that it's funny that a guy ever gets hurt, but it was just, you know,
the passion.
It was cool seeing the passion of him being like so open and honest about how he felt, whether he was right or not. But, I could see Glasnow shooting up. Lynn, I think, should definitely be higher. It's sort of like that Morton thing, I think, because he had that slow start, because he's like an old fat guy. There's right. just a natural discount on there. I'm sure if Lynn listens to this podcast, I apologize the way he, you know, curses at himself and after a strikeout, you know, the Pitching Ninja videos that he puts together with how fired up he gets. I do not want to be on his wrong side. I'm hyping you up, Lenslin. I promise.
I
love you at this ADP, and I think you should be higher, but I just don't think that you'll shoot up as much. But hey, that's a good thing because I'll probably have a few more shares of you. So shout out Lenslin there. But I think Glasnow, if he looks like, you know, Tyler Glasnow of 2021, or, you know, and 2020, he could shoot up very, very quickly, depending on how he does in a few spring starts.
Yeah, you almost forget about Glasnow with all the Shane McClanahan and even Shane Baz last year. But yes, I mean, definitely just an absolute ace when he is on the mound. And yeah, health pending, there's no reason he's not in that same discussion we were talking about earlier. I mean, maybe volume, but, you know, if he can get up to like 150, you know, his strikeout numbers will look right there with Javier's and Gossman's. And then Lance Lynn, you know, to help dig us out of the hole, if you're tuning in, Lance, phenomenal second half last year. You know, the first half was not good with just 36 innings, but that was, you know, coming off of some knee surgery issues, which has to be a nightmare to deal with. And yeah, the first 36 innings had a 7.5 ERA. Post All-Star break, 85 innings pitched, 89 strikeouts, a 2.52 ERA, and a 0.97 WHIP. So Lynn, you know, 35 years old, but he's a workhorse, and he's got the pitch mix with a bunch of different looks at the heat with the four seamer, the cutter, the sinker. You know, last year we were drafting Lynn around pick 50, and now it's almost 100 picks behind that. So I think that's a good shout as well for Lynn. I like both of those guys. Then move into a couple youngsters here. Miguel Vargas, who, again, is just, you know, just an absolute pillar of the pod for the offseason. Another guy that we've got shares of, Steve. And Hunter Brown, who we've talked about plenty. These were two more names mentioned on Matthew Davis's Twitter thread there, and ones that we've talked about plenty. So I could see them moving up, especially with Vargas getting an extra vote of confidence in terms of playing time. And Vargas right now is going in the 23rd round at pick 281. Just don't see that staying. And then as for Hunter Brown, it's a little bit earlier, I believe, at where are you, Hunter Brown? 260, so just 20 picks ahead of Miguel Vargas. Steve, we talked about both of these guys. I think we like them. Which of the two do you see kind of rising more And are you ready for the rise?
Unless Brown gets announced that he has a rotation spot, I don't see him going much higher than this. I think Vargas is going to shoot up because it's been announced that he is essentially has the inside track for the starting second base job. I think it also, you know, hinted that he'll play some third. So, unfortunately, right now on NFBC, just because of the rules, he only has first base eligibility, which kind of stinks. But he'll definitely get second soon and then potentially even third too. So I think as that news sort of trickles down more and, you know, becomes more apparent that Vargas does have a starting job, I think he is going to shoot up again, unless Brown is announced that he's in the rotation, which I don't think he will be. Not saying that he won't contribute this year in the rotation. The Astros have done six man before, but that was with Verlander coming off of Tommy John. I still think that Astros six starters are extremely valuable. That's kind of what Christian Javier was heading into the season last year. That didn't prevent me from getting a lot of shares. So I'll still be drafting Brown, but I think it'll be around this cost, which I'm here for just because it's good value.
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of Vargas, and he struggled when he was up in the majors, but was so good in AAA, and the pedigree is phenomenal. I could see him easily moving in front of Bryson Stott, who's at ADP 225, and then the second baseman ahead of that are Ketel Marte at 208, Josh Rojas at 198, Jeff McNeil at 188. To me, I think that might be, you know, where his average kind of balances out in March, but I think his min pick might jump up where, you know, some like the Tyro Estradas and Brandon Lowe's are at like 170. Maybe I'm just kind of going crazy there with Vargas, Steve, but it's such a shallow position and the Dodgers lineup, and especially if he has a good spring, I think people, as soon as you get past that range of like, you know, Polanco and Max Muncy, I think people are just going to be like, well, all these other guys are just in one big bucket of we don't know if it's going to work out or not. And I could see Vargas kind of people taking some reaches in that range.
Totally agree. I think he'll finish above most of those guys.
Yeah, which is crazy because right now, again, ADP even, you know, I guess it's recent, but 280 and climbing fast, so... That's Vargas. And then, Steve, let's round out with a couple pitchers in kind of the SP 4 or 5 range, Chris Sale and Joe Ryan. We talked about Sale a little bit, but Joe Ryan's another one that I grabbed in the pitcherless mock, and Nick Pollock gave me the stamp of approval. He really likes Joe Ryan, which is you know, almost reason alone, but Ryan is a name that kind of gets swept under the rug. He's, you know... Even though he's got kind of the wonky delivery, he still kind of has a vanilla thing going on. Pick 148 right now is where Joe Ryan is. So what do you think here? Do you foresee that there will be a little bit of helium, and would you be on board with it?
I don't know. I'm on board with it. I like Joe Ryan. I think he's great. I drafted him last year. Think he's a good pitcher. I think he's underrated. Just because he doesn't have that high-end fastball velocity you'd expect from a good fantasy starter. But we've talked about it a lot on the show. The deceptiveness is real. So I like Ryan. I just don't know if there will be as much of a really any more ADP jump. I think it's just kind of like a boring 3-4. At least that's kind of what the market is viewing him as. Maybe even more of a 4-5. But I think he's definitely better than that. Maybe it's, you know, a two first name thing. I don't know. being in Minnesota, not the biggest market, not having amazing strikeout numbers, but, you know, good enough. I mean, you know, a 25% strikeout rate. I think what's going to get better with Ryan is the walk rate. It was 7.8%, but, you know, in the minors, in the high minors, and in his stint in 2021, he had, you know, closer to 5-6% walk rate. So I think that might improve. I think he's got pretty good command. So I think he might be better than he actually is. I just don't, you know, he doesn't seem like a guy that's an extreme riser, at least
yeah,
to me, unless I'm missing something. With Sale, like, you know, if he looks good in spring training with all his injuries, like, he's going to shoot up the board. So
definitely.
But I like both these guys. I think I'd honestly feel better with Joe Ryan, just more of a lock for injuries, just considering what Sale's been through. I know there was a lot of bad luck last year, but, you know, he was still missed a lot of time.
Yeah, he did. Weird injuries, but still injuries. So, yeah, Ryan is at the start of kind of a pitching tier, because for him to move up, it would be in the range of like Blake Snell and Clayton Kershaw. And like,
yeah, he's not gonna get there, right? Yeah,
he's
right?
not gonna
yeah,
get there. Yeah. And I think, you know, because of those pitchers there, it's like he starts the next tier with Freddy Peralta, Lance Lynn, you know, in that range. So I think, you know, it's a good range for him, but it's yeah, I think when you look at names around, even like Jesus Luzardo is a name that could climb a little bit faster than Joe Ryan. So I think great assessment. And yeah, Ryan's a really good vanilla. If you get a guy like Christian Javier at the start of the show, Ryan's a nice kind of pairing for high floor to round out that rotation. So that rounds out the show, Steve. And apologies, you know, we can't help ourselves going over the hour mark, even right. when you're under the weather. But yeah, we'll be back, guys, in a couple weeks. We're going to hit on some fun topics, talk about a little PLV with some of the new stuff on the site. And we should have a
big guest.
Yeah, we'll have a big guest for that one. You know, a guy who's got a little bit of something to do with pitcher lists. So excited there. And after February, we will be back to once a week podcast. But until then, enjoy the draft season. Enjoy the prep. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, we would love if you went out, gave us a rating, review. Otherwise, you can follow us on Twitter at WinsBovePod. I am at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. That's WinsBovFantasy, episode 86. Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.